Just lots of really like good, like challenging music and spoken word content. It's a great station.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam territory. Learn how to get involved at citr.ca.
And fading out in the background there, that was Cadaverine from The Ruffled Feathers, kicking off another fantastic episode of Intersections here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here at the beautiful British Columbia, University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver. Intersections is the show brought to you every week by CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. We are a group of volunteers and staff here at CITR who put together this intersectional feminist news program every week for your listening pleasure, featuring interviews, discussions, and all sorts of things to do with gender identity and intersectionality. My name is Mel Woods, hanging out with you every week. I am the Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator, and this week I'm joined in the booth by collective member Maxime. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Woohoo! It's going to be fun. We have a jam-packed show planned for you today. Count three interviews we have for you. We've got an interview with a member of the Gender, Race, and Social Justice Undergraduate Student Society about recent counter-protests to pro-life groups on campus. We have an interview with musician Ardot Ariel about her new album, which just dropped yesterday, and she's now touring and will be playing Vancouver next Wednesday. And first up, we'll have a live on-air interview with Broken Pencil Magazine editor-in-chief Jonathan Vallely about Canzine, which is coming to Vancouver this Sunday, featuring a panel on feminism and witchcraft. So that's going to be super cool. I'm excited. I hope you're excited wherever you are out there in radio land. So, but in the meantime, we're going to listen to a little bit more music and keep things going wherever you may be. So just give me 2 seconds, set that up, and we'll be good to go. But yes, you'll be hearing from our interview with Jonathan right after the break.
Thank you.
Awesome. And fading out in the background there, that was White Lung with Below off of their album Paradise. Before that, we heard from the Cosmetics. The track was Sleepwalking. That was off their 7-inch release Olympia Plus. And kicking off the set, we heard from the Courtneys. That was Country Song off of their album The Courtneys 2. And now Maxime and I are joined in studio by Jonathan Vallely over the phone, I guess, in studio, who is the editor-in-chief of Broken Pencil magazine. And Jonathan's going to chat a bit with Maxime about Canzine Vancouver and the really cool panel on feminism and witchcraft they are doing, right?
Yes. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So can you tell us a bit about Canzine? Like, what is it?
Yeah, sure. So Canzine is we call it a festival of zines, comics, and underground publishing. So it is a zine fair, and it is a zine fair that we at Broken Pencil produce in multiple cities across Canada. So last week we had Canzine, or 2 weeks ago we had Canzine Toronto. Last week we had Canzine Winnipeg. On Saturday we have Canzine Calgary, and then we rounded off with Canzine Vancouver on Sunday at SFU Woodwards on Hastings Street. And so the main event of Canzine is definitely the zine fair, the sort of marketplace style with vendors, and everybody's got zines, books, prints, any kind of printed material. And so you'll get everything from somebody's hand-drawn comic that is their first time ever launching, to other sort of more beautifully crafted book objects, all the way over to sort of cut and paste zines and anarchist zines, as well as collaborative community projects that take the form of publications. So we've got in Vancouver over 100 vendors this year, which is pretty amazing. It's our biggest Canzine Vancouver ever. And we've also got a couple cool events, including we're having a zine party with Cole Pauls, who's the creator of Pizza Punks and Duck Wakata Warriors, at 5 o'clock. And as you mentioned, we're having a panel about feminism and witchcraft and how that plays into DIY arts and underground arts as well.
Yes, and can you tell us a bit about that, why this topic of witchcraft and feminism was chosen as a feature panel?
Yeah, so it's actually a theme that has come up over and over again since I've been working with Broken Pencil, first as assistant editor and then later as editor, and in the zine scene as well. It's just something that I've noticed, particularly in queer zines and in feminist zines and also queer and feminist arts outside of publications, that there is a really strong thrust, whether you want to call it a return or a resurgence or just sort of a moment, where a lot of queer and feminist makers are looking at whether it's histories of witchcraft or occultism, or doing those practices as a part of their art in this day and age, or whether that's a part of somebody's identity. And also, really interestingly, bringing in sort of non-Western ideas of the supernatural or of spirituality and magic, and seeing those as a part of a broader personal practice or a holistic practice of art. So we actually did a similar panel in Toronto, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, at Canzine Toronto, and we had an amazing mix of creators who spoke, each of them, about their unique relationship to magic or to the occult or to the supernatural, and how that made its way into their work as queer and feminist artists. And so we thought it might be interesting to sort of expand that conversation in Vancouver and see what those issues and what those practices looked like here.
And why do you think that this topic is relevant in current day society?
I think there are a few reasons. I think particularly in a moment where I think feminism is being really challenged and expanded in a lot of important ways, around its history, around race and colonialism, around class, and of course that key word of intersectionality. I think that that magic or witchcraft, provides, especially for artists who are used to thinking in creative and sometimes sort of dogma-destroying ways, it's a useful way to look at the contradictions and the paradoxes, but also the power at play in sort of this day and age. And I think it lends itself really well with arts, in that it is also sort of has always historically been framed, and maybe still is, as a sort of rebellious practice. And so I think there are a few different currents going on that make that that have made that conversation possible. And I think that also the fact that there are many different ways of approaching that topic, and that we have digital media and the internet where we can compare those things, but also things and share knowledges, but also things like zines, which are really accessible forms of sharing things like herbal remedies or spells, if that's your thing. And so I think that we've also got all of the media at our fingertips to share that knowledge and share that empowerment.
And with this topic, do you feel like you've experienced any criticism, especially in organizing the panel?
I haven't personally received criticism as an organizer of the panel, and I should also shout out my colleague Anissa Rahani, who has organized the panel in Vancouver, and but it was me who organized the panel in Toronto. I think there are valid criticisms to be made around the language choice of witchcraft or of occult or the supernatural, simply because people have very specific and very unique histories and attachments and approaches to that language. And so as soon as you say witchcraft, you may be excluding somebody who feels that you know, part of their practice might be a valuable addition to the conversation, but which they don't feel comfortable calling witchcraft, perhaps because it's non-Western, or perhaps because it's they have another specific title to it. And so I think that I hope that folks can come in with an open mind to those nuances and to the fact that the language of witchcraft or the occult is something we're using a bit as a stand-in for all of these different practices that involve the supernatural and magic, however, in whatever context they're happening. But what we haven't experienced is any pushback from any sort of conservative or anti sort of witchcraft voices or organizations. I mean, the zine scene and the DIY art scene that Canzine is a part of is pretty, squarely centered in sort of the leftist and radical conversations, and doesn't have a whole lot of time for any sort of moralizing critique. So I would say the critique of how do we make this topic inclusive for the many, many different practices which can and should be a part of that conversation, I think is the critique which is most important, and which I hope can produce some interesting points and dialogues on Sunday.
Wow, that sounds all really interesting. So can you tell us, like, when will it happen for those who are interested? Where can they find more information?
I would love to tell you. So the panel is at 3 o'clock at SFU Woodwards at 149 West Hastings Street. And it'll be happening in sort of the main events room, and we'll have a welcome table. We can direct you there when you arrive. So that's at 3 o'clock. So maybe get there, you know, 2:45. But the Canzine event opens to the public at 1 o'clock and runs all day until 7 p.m. And so I really hope everyone can make it out. And it is, it's free. It comes with a free issue of Broken Pencil magazine, but we will be accepting donations. And we'll also be selling cheap subscriptions. But I think that if you're interested in this panel, you should also make some time to come and walk around the zine fair and see what some of the creators are making, because I think you'll also really be able to find something that speaks to you. So the panel's at 3 o'clock. The doors open at 1 o'clock. SFU Woodwards. It's Canzine Vancouver. And if you go to Canzine, that's Canzine.ca, or you just search Canzine Vancouver on Facebook, you'll find all the information you need about the event. So I hope everyone can make it out.
All right. Well, thank you for chatting for us, and thank you for all the information you've given us today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, right. Jonathan. We really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Yeah, right, cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye. So yeah, that was our interview with Jonathan Vallely. And I hope all of you out there in Radioland go check out Canzine this weekend. I know I will be. It sounds like a whole bunch of fun. And speaking of interviews, we're going to hear another one right up next here. This is my chat that I had over the phone just the other day with musician R. Ariel, who is out of Phoenix, who's coming to town next week to play a show at the Toast Collective on Wednesday, November 8th. And she talked with me a bit about being a woman in the music scene and what it is like to produce, mix, master all your own music, and tour around a brand new album, which just dropped yesterday. So we'll hear my interview with her, and then we'll hear one of her tracks. So enjoy that one here on Intersections. So yeah, thanks for talking to me. If you could start, maybe introduce yourself.
So I go by R.O.L., and I am a musician, author, producer, videographer, bunch of, I'm not allowed to, if I accidentally say shit, I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. It's community radio.
Okay, great. Yeah, I do a bunch of shit. And so, I really like helping out, other musicians. So that's kind of why I got into producing and to do my own stuff. And yeah, that's kind of the summary of myself.
Fantastic. And so what kind of music do you produce? How would you describe it?
I would say it's like experimental, kind of. This newer album is definitely more like pop, beat-based experimental music. And then I think before it was definitely more like shoegazy or something. I've always had trouble figuring out exactly what to call it, but I think it's just kind of like, a lot of it is just messing with like soundscapes and trying to figure out ways to put it together.
Very cool. And so, as I mentioned before, you write and you record and you master all your own mixes. What has that experience been like, kind of gaining all those skills and being able to have the full creative control over what you're producing?
It's been a trip. It's been really, I think I started doing it like that just because I hadn't found, I would try to work with people, and it was just always really hard to, I mean, generally, I haven't found another woman that I could work with, but I found a lot of men, and I found it to be, there was like some sort of disconnect going on, especially in the type of music that I'm making, which is kind of supposed to be a little bit more vulnerable, and trying to like get you know, an engineer or a producer to understand that can sometimes be difficult. So I kind of was just like, whatever, I'll do it myself. And I think it's been wonderful as far as understanding, like when I'm writing music now, I definitely am much more conscious of how it's going to be recorded and the possibilities with recording versus live performances.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you were talking a bit about working with men in the industry. What has your experience as a woman in the industry been like? Have you had any good experiences, bad experiences, somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. I'm sure like every woman and femme in the music industry. I think in general, you know, I kind of lean towards wanting to work with women more than men just because I feel like it's still, sadly, even though it's 2017, I feel like it's really, I still get kind of, you know, the same stupid comments that have been going on forever of just like, oh, well, you play guitar, or like, you know how to plug in a mic. And so it's just like, I think and then plus the sexual harassment that occurs, especially being a solo touring artist, is pretty intense as well in the music industry. And so, yeah. Definitely prefer to work with women.
Fair. And yeah, how do you think the music industry can improve for women and for femme folks?
For the DIY community, which is like definitely who I focus on more, I feel like it would be great if there were just more women booking. And I feel like that almost every show I've played where a woman is booking, it's more diverse and it's more inclusive. And I think that's because Naturally, we're kind of leaning that way anyway. And really, I mean, white, straight men giving up those positions and giving them to people who they kind of, it's not even like, I feel like a lot of us don't even think about it. We're just looking for the best musicians, and the best musicians are diverse, you know. So, yeah, I think just giving women a little bit more control would be awesome.
Yeah, run the world, girls, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Shout out to Beyonce.
Oh, every day. And so are you on tour right now? Like as we're chatting here, you're touring around?
Tour actually starts officially tomorrow.
Ooh.
So
when this airs, it'll be yesterday, I guess.
Yes.
So how are you preparing for the tour? How are you getting pumped up for that touring life?
I honestly am kind of scared. I haven't been on tour in a year because I've just been working on this new album and like kind of trying to rest a little bit, because for 2 years or so I was pretty much consistently on tour, and I think I kind of burnt myself out of just being on the road all the time. And so, yeah, there's like some nervousness going into it, or just like preparing myself to deal with all of the obstacles again, and preparing myself to be tired all the time. So practicing and sleeping are the two ways that I'm preparing.
Yeah, that sounds good. And so you are touring your new album, and how would you describe that album to folks who are either familiar with your music or are coming into it fresh?
You know, actually, this reviewer, music journalist, he has been reviewing my albums for a while, and he said that it's more digestible than my other music, which I didn't really notice that, but I think that that's probably the best way to describe it, I guess. It's definitely much more poppy, and the vocals are much more clear than I normally make them. And so, I feel like it's more like, yeah, pop beat-based music than anything else I've ever made.
Interesting. Yeah, I listened to a few of the tracks, and it sounds great. And we'll play them around this interview when we were this on the show. So all the people out there in Radioland will get a taste of it, too. So you'll be in Vancouver. Can you maybe talk about the shows that you're specifically doing here?
Yeah, Vancouver is going to be at Toast Collective with Fake Tears and I think it's Divorce. That show's going to be awesome. I'm really excited for it. All the bands that are on the bill are really great. And I've played Vancouver, three or four times. So I haven't played a bunch, but I'm excited. I always like playing the west coast of Canada.
Yeah, what's been your favorite thing about Vancouver when you've been in town?
Honestly, the food and just like walking around. I feel like the architecture there is really pretty, and the weather isn't too bad compared to like Edmonton. And I actually went what is that place all the way on the other side of Canada? The island.
Newfoundland?
It's like I went all the way to like the furthest east I could possibly go in Canada.
That'd be Newfoundland,
Yeah, that was last tour, and I was just like freezing as hell. It's just like this one. I mean, I'm kind of always, for some reason, touring in the fall. It always ends up happening that way, so I feel like I just get used to being cold.
That's the Canadian experience.
Yeah. Vancouver is awesome, though. I love Vancouver. I feel like the only problem is that it's a bit expensive, because I thought about moving there a couple times, but I'm like, I don't know how y'all figure out your money up there.
Well, we get by. Barely. Well, awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I know I and lots of folks are pretty psyched for the show at the Toast Collective. And if folks want to check out more of your music or your work, where can they go?
They can go everywhere. rariel.bandcamp.com or Spotify, iTunes, Tidal, pretty much any music streaming service. My music's on it at this point. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, thanks so much again for taking the time to chat.
You're biking, you're biking, you're biking. Oh, no! Something broke and you need it fixed, or you need to learn how to fix it, and the AMS Bike Co-op and Bike Kitchen have been there for you. And now is your chance to be there for them. Come out November 10th to GAM Gallery at 110 East Hastings from 7 p.m. to midnight for Pedaling Art, their second annual fundraiser and bike art auction in collaboration with Our Community Bikes. So share the love. Make it out. UBC Theater and Film presents a world premiere shining with love and possibility. Wives and Daughters by Jacqueline Firkins, based on Elizabeth Gaskell's Victorian serial novel, is a charming romp of love convoluted by hidden desires and expectations.
I like to be liked, but when people carry their affection too far, they become troublesome.
Cynthia's a sweet girl and charming, but she was always in some spot of trouble. She wasn't mischievous exactly, but mischief seemed to follow her.
Join us from November 9th to 25th at the Frederick Wood Theater.
After a certain age, a daughter becomes inconvenient.
So we must stop being inconvenient daughters and become inconvenient wives?
Theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
And we are back. You are tuned into Intersections here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the beautiful UBC campus here in Vancouver. My name is Mel Woods, Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator here at CITR, bringing you, along with the rest of the Gender Empowerment Collective, we bring you a great hour of spoken word news content every week. You just heard my interview with R. Ariel, who is playing a show at the Toast Collective on November 8th. Go check that one out. And before that, we heard our interview with Jonathan Vallely, the editor-in-chief of Broken Pencil Magazine, about the upcoming Cannes Zine event here in Vancouver on Sunday. We have one more interview for you, and then we will play the show out with a song from R. Ariel. This next interview comes from one of our collective members, Sam. It is with the treasurer of the Gender, Race, and Social Justice Undergraduate Association, which is the student club here on campus that organized some counter-protests to the pro-life demonstrators here a couple weeks back. So enjoy that one, and if we don't hear from you again after us, you'll be hearing from Democracy Watch, which is pretty cool. So thank you for tuning in, everybody. Enjoy Sam's interview, enjoy R. Ariel's music, and enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Hey folks, this is Sam from the Gender Empowerment Collective, and I'm here with
Kirsten Tarasoff, and I'm the Treasurer and Arts Undergraduate Society Representative from the Gender, Race, Sexuality, and Social Justice Undergraduate Association.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do?
So what GRSJ Undergrad Association does is basically we serve as the association for the GRSJ degree on campus, and we're open for anyone to join and take part in our events. We work with a lot of intersectional feminist academic type things. Our big event occurs at the end of every year, and that's called the F-Word Conference, where we bring together student presenters, workshops, as well as keynote speakers, and it's free for everyone to come to. Throughout the year, we also bring various workshops to campus. Last year, we brought Fat Panic, which talks a lot about body positivity. And we do other kind of smaller events like networking, social justice movie night. My personal favorite was last week. That was Chatting Over Chocolates, where we bring together faculty and people who are interested in social justice with lots of chocolate.
That's great. Always draw on the folks with food.
Oh, 100%.
So you kind of went over it a bit. Your goals in general for the year are programming and getting folks together to have conversations.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, about that. So usually we want to expose people to what does GRSJ actually do and add a face to a lot of the voices you hear about the discussion of social justice, because it's obviously a hot topic right now. So we try to really bring fun events for students to campus and a way for them to learn more while also getting to know other people with the same interests.
That's really great. So as you already mentioned, there's already been a few events going on this year with the GRSJUA. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Chatting Over Chocolates, but one of the other big ones that's happened so far is the counter-protest to the anti-abortion protest. So I'm just wondering, why is this issue so important to you folks?
I think what we all really agree on in social justice is not only the fact that pro-choice and accessibility to abortion should be something that everyone has the right to, but that they should actually have reproductive rights. So things like accessibility to contraceptives, ability to choose what you want to do with your own body. If you choose to have a child, that child should be able to grow up in a safe and respectable environment. So really, when Lifeline comes to campus, we feel like not only do they personally attack people who have maybe had to deal with abortions, right, because that's never an experience anyone wants to have or wants to revisit, but they also kind of skirt around a lot of the issues of, well, how should contraceptives be provided? Should housing be more accessible and affordable for people that want to have children and need a place to raise their children? Other issues such as adoption, you know, they really fail to address the amount of children that are in the foster care system right now and fail to do anything to show that they're pro-life so much as they are anti-choice and really oppressing people into what they should do with their bodies if they do become pregnant.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the GRSJUA has sort of identified the fact that there might be a few gaps maybe in the conversation, and that's maybe you're trying to fill those gaps by doing a counter-protest?
Yeah, definitely. And with our counter-protest, one of the things we hand out is actually a pamphlet with some mental and sexual health resources. So stuff on campus, like UBC Counseling Services and the Sexual Assault Support Center, are a couple on there. But we also have places off of campus like Community, which is for LGBTQ people to go in and get sexual health resources in a place that's safe for them. Or just Vancouver Coastal Health Services, where they can go in, get contraceptives, and hopefully prevent pregnancies that are unwanted before they happen, mm-hmm. so that it's less of a debate and giving everyone accessible health care.
Right. So who do we see on the front lines of this counter-protest? I mean, obviously there's folks from GRSJ who are out there, but I'm wondering, like, is there other than like students outside of GRSJ, those teachers or other community members?
We definitely have other organizations on campus that are really involved with the counter-protest. So as mentioned before, the Sexual Assault Support Center set up a table right near the protest, providing immediate support to anyone who needed it. We also have individual students who just join out of interest and they want to take a stand and be there providing support and showing that they don't want these kind of images on their campus. Another group that has been really involved is the Revolutionary Student Movement. So I know there's been a lot of pictures of the giant red banner up reading No Platform for Hate Speech, and that was their doing. So they've also taken a stand against UBC Lifeline and their genocide awareness project on campus.
Mm-hmm. So there is support from other groups at UBC. I'm wondering, is UBC as an institution engaging with this conversation? Is the AMS engaging with this conversation as they, I mean, they allow it to happen because it's happening, right?
Yeah, so there's actually a long history with the AMS and UBC Lifeline. So Lifeline is an AMS club, and I believe back in 1999, somewhere around that time, Lifeline set up their genocide awareness project, and members of the AMS actually tore it down, and that was taken to court with Lifeline ending up winning that court case. So kind of a complicated history to it, especially because AMS has to not have political opinions in what clubs they allow to be on campus. So there is AMS code and OPSED and stuff like that, which shows how clubs are allowed to act. UBC Lifeline definitely toes the line of that. There's places where it could be, you know, quite blurry if their methods of protest are acceptable. But AMS itself has not necessarily engaged with Lifeline after losing the court case against them back in the early 2000s.
Right, yeah, it can be tough when there's like kind of all that history going on and trying to be like quote unquote neutral, mm-hmm. when that's the body that you're supposed to be, but when there's students kind of expressing concern, like how do you navigate that?
Yeah, definitely. And they are also, we think there needs to be a prioritization of students' mental health being kind of out on the front lines of the protest. I've had people, you know, break down. They've walked by and they've started crying. really personal things where they've confided in me that, you know what, they had an abortion like a month ago, they were assaulted, really difficult stories where they're on campus trying to be in this academic headspace where university life is already stressful and it's tough, but especially for young people who have had to undergo experiences with maybe any reproductive trauma, whether they've had abortions or not, it's just not something that I think is acceptable to show to students.
Right. So UBC Lifeline, on their Facebook page where I found this, it says that they seek to promote open and fair discussion regarding the life issues and support individuals in making life-affirming decisions. Do you think that that has been demonstrated in the protests so far?
Not necessarily. I think the way they actually go about their protests really shows a lot of hypocrisy, where they're very keen to stand in front of these graphic images. But going through their Facebook as well, I actually haven't found any events of, hey, let's do fundraisers for foster children. Let's fund cheap, accessible contraceptives for all people. Let's talk to students about sexual education and maybe prevent pregnancies. They kind of go about it in a way that attacks people who have made a choice or shames people into making a certain choice out of a lot of guilt. So it's absolutely everyone's own choice, you know, if they want to be pro-life or pro-choice. But the way that they push that upon others doesn't necessarily provoke conversation. They are standing, you know, in front of those pictures talking to people, but it promotes a lot of confrontation where people see those pictures and they're not going up for an open discussion and debate on kind of this level ground to start off on. It's very emotionally charged, and that's what they are going off of, is using these very emotionally charged images to start their conversation and using it to talk about what is moral, right? If you see gore, is that moral? Well, we could talk about the same thing with a photo of childbirth, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of people wouldn't want that displayed on campus. So where do you draw the line with that and their tactics towards discussion?
Right, so it's all about sort of having heated discussions, but like, where does that go? What are they really doing outside of these few days that they're doing these protests?
Yeah, exactly. Because Lifeline, I wouldn't say they're a very visible club other than the few days of protest that they come out a couple of times a year. Not that I necessarily mind that they're not super visible, but what else are they necessarily doing to improve conditions for children that are born, right? What are they doing to maybe prevent abortions other than these super confrontational tactics that are very, very public?
Right. So just a question. If you could say something to someone from the UBC Lifeline, maybe in the context of the protest or maybe outside the context of the protest, whatever you choose, and if you could say something to them completely uninterrupted, what might you want to say to that person?
I'd want them to really look at themselves and look at what you're attaching your face to and if you're really doing any benefit for your community. Are you really saving lives, and whose lives are you prioritizing? You know, we all should have access to safe and affordable health care. But if you're prioritizing a fetus over a person who has become pregnant, what does that really say about your values? And what are you actually going to do to make people stop having abortions other than these super confrontational tactics? Would you ever be willing to raise money for people to have cheap contraceptives? Would you go out into the community and teach sexual education? Because it's been proven that abstinence-only states that have that kind of sexual education have higher rates of abortion. Are you really educated on the topic? You know, have you done research on what prevents abortion? And do you know that your posters don't?
Oh, yeah, actually, some of the discourses around the pictures themselves, I've heard folks saying, like, medically inaccurate photos. And so would that be something that you would want to address?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one that sticks in my head is the abortion that occurred at 24 weeks. They have a photo up there. And for me, looking at the numbers, 90% of abortions occur before that 20-week mark. So a 24-week abortion is not only very rare, but it's very likely that there's something wrong with the fetus, or it could be endangering the mother's life, or, you know, no one wants to have an abortion that late because it's very traumatizing to the body. So if they did not have accessibility to a clinic where they could get that done, or if they simply did not know, they weren't educated on reproduction, that could happen. Like I've said before, abortion is never something that someone wants to go through, and hopefully they never have to go through it if they're provided good education and contraceptives. But if it does get to that point, you know, we should be looking at what are the sociological aspects to it. So when you post this photo saying, oh, there's this 24-week fetus that's been aborted without any of that context, that it's very rare to have an abortion that late, and there are these very specific circumstances that may lead to it, you know, you're kind of leading people astray in what's actually correct about abortion.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that folks can do to support GRSJUA in this situation, or anything that folks can do to support the folks who are impacted by this triggering content?
I would definitely say provide support for your friends, be there for other people on campus, and have your voice heard, right? If you don't like what you're seeing on campus, no matter what it is, we live in a society that's so great, like Canada, where we have this free speech, right? Lifeline utilizes it. Why don't you, right? Talk about Lifeline, write an article, go on the radio, do whatever you want to do to put your voice out there and say, you know what, I support you. If you've had to go through an experience like an abortion, I support your ability to make reproductive choices as an adult, or just as someone who's had the circumstance where you've been pushed into that. You have your own right to your body, and I think that we should fully support all people who've had abortions or who need any support after seeing those images on their campus. So with GRSJ, you know, we have events throughout the year, and one of the things we do is collect donations for various organizations around Canada. At Chatting Over Chocolates, we collected some money for the Women's Memorial March on Valentine's Day. So looking into donating to causes like that, which will actually save lives and maybe recognize how unequal a lot of harm is in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So actually my last question, you kind of touched on this in the beginning already, it was just wondering what's sort of on the horizon for GRSJ. Is there anything immediate coming up that you want to talk about, or maybe expand more sort of on the F Word conference is what it's called, right?
Yeah, so the next one event that we would have coming up is mid-November, and that's what to do with your GRSJ major or minor. So we're bringing in graduates from the program who have applied GRSJ into their field of study. So I know for lots of students, they don't necessarily know where their degree is taking them. They're just studying what they're passionate in and where their heart is taking them. So it's very interesting to see people that have turned their passion into a lot of potential. And then the F Word conference comes up at the end of second semester every year. So this year, planning is obviously still a ways away, but it's super exciting to know that we're going to, again, have a free conference for anyone who wants to attend, have opportunities for students to present their work on anything and everything related to GRSJ, whether or not they're in the faculty, and also provide workshops. So last year we had a few great ones like promoting transliteracies, where we talk about pronouns, what you should do in certain situations, dealing with non-binary genders and understanding how you can make non-binary people more comfortable in your community. We brought in Black Lives Matter to discuss police and pride, and basically their position on that, what action has been taken, and the history to that entire debate. A self-defense workshop, which is always very popular, and some other really great discussions take place around race, how we look at race, gender, you know, how this sort of thing has evolved and where conversations are taking us and where we hope to be in the future.
Great. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Really, yeah, of
appreciate
course.
It.
say it's time, 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 time that I've tried. Baby, I've tried. So I take a pill, I have a drink, I try to sleep, smoke some weed, it doesn't leave. I take a pill, I have a drink, I try to sleep, smoke some weed, it doesn't leave. I take a pill, I have a drink, I try to sleep.